We're here with the Chantilly Writers at Elaine's Literary Salon. I'm going to throw it over to Nick, who's president of the club, correct?
Yes, I'm the moderator of the Writers of Chantilly, and I'm here today with Robert Cantrell, who's written this interesting book, Understanding Sun Tzu on the Art of War. Would you like to introduce yourself, Robert?
Yes, I'm Robert Cantrell. I'm an author of this particular book, writing. I'm actually in regular life, a patent practitioner, drafting and prosecuting patent applications. So it's fun to write some other things every once in a while. And this particular book is one that I wrote a long time ago, in 2003. I actually started working on it in 1999.
Well, I know that there have been, over the centuries, many, many commentaries on Sun Tzu's Art of War. So I wonder if you could tell us a little about what your book offers and what led you to write this, that you had to say that hadn't been said before?
Well, one of the things is, if you look at most of the interpretations in Sun Tzu out there, they use examples from the Chinese Warring States period, which are great examples, but not the ones that American audiences are particularly familiar with. So I sought examples in mostly American, also British, and a few other countries' military histories, mostly Western, that even if the particular generals hadn't used Sun Tzu particularly, the examples, the case studies, fit some of the principles that Sun Tzu taught.
So would you say that Sun Tzu is as relevant today as he was in Chinese times?
Well, it continues to be relevant.
Okay. Now, I know that you are not ethnically Chinese, and so I wonder what led you to an interest in Sun Tzu and to conceive the writing of a book about it.
It actually goes back into the 80s when I was in college. I went into one of my ROTC classes. I was an officer, it was in the 101st Airborne Division, and found this book on our desk, Military Strategy, and it was one of the Sun Tzu translations. Started to read through and just found it to be fascinating. And I referred back to it for many, many years and just started dabbling with presentations and writings. And I'd written a business strategy book that borrowed some of the Sun Tzu principles and put that out to agents and the like. And they said, well, Sun Tzu already exists. And eventually just said, well, why don't I just go write and do an interpretation of the core text and stay on the military focus, because it is a military strategy.
You mentioned it being from writing something from the business strategy point of view. Who would you say that Sun Tzu is relevant to?
It's mostly relevant to, it's really relevant to any conflict strategy. So military, of course, but my second most popular audience for the book are litigators, lawyers. Very popular. It's also been very popular with engineers. For some reason, engineers are particularly interested in the topic. So that's probably the third biggest audience. And the fourth are just general business folks.
And what principles in the book do you think are most applicable to all these different sets of people?
The central theme of the Sun Tzu, and it's also discussed in here, that the Sun Tzu also had sources. And Sun Tzu, and that's discussed in here as well. And those sources trace back to Taoism and the Tao Te Ching. And so probably one of the most significant strategic points ever spoken by anybody comes from the Tao Te Ching and Lao Tzu, where he says the master does nothing, and yet he leaves nothing undone. And you can trace that philosophy directly to Sun Tzu's common advice that people often cite is the best way to win a war is to win without fighting. And there's some subtleties to that, but it means using whatever means are available to try to win a conflict besides, in the case of the military, direct kinetic confrontation. Okay. And, that can be economics, that can be forms of maneuver that catch an enemy off guard, force a surrender. It could be making a former enemy a friend, which is a great way of winning a conflict without fighting. So there's lots of nuances to that, and that's discussed rather significantly.
Now, before we started the interview, we were talking a bit about where your book had been applied, and you had mentioned the actual law colleges.
So I started writing in 99. 2002, I saw peer reviews. So I went right to the National Law College and got peer reviewed by four prominent professors that were there. And then the National Law College adopted it for several years for their studies, particularly as one of the peer reviewers taught the Sun Tzu class.
Would they read it alongside the original Sun Tzu?
They read it alongside the original. And there is a copy of the original from 2011 in here, as well as the interpretation. So, and then I would later found that that it appeared on a curriculum at the Air War College, and then later at the Naval War College, you know, a couple of classes. So it got around, some different universities and in the things.
In your personal life, have you ever used Sun Tzu's principles?
Well, I'm using it all the time.
Oh, good.
Okay.
You right now?
Well, I'm in the patent law field.
Okay.
So that puts me in the legal
that's
field.
That's more of that conflict thing.
It's conflict. So it's and that's that's the root of what it's really about is conflict strategy. And of course, the military is the ultimate conflict.
Yeah.
Wars are the ultimate conflict, and so. And the origin is from the Chinese Warring States period. Sun Tzu, the authors and the commentators, mostly wrote about 3,000 years ago, but it's stayed relevant all that time.
So was there ever time when I know that, for instance, Shakespeare had a period when he actually kind of fell out of favor and people didn't read him. So would you think that Sun Tzu has been read continuously, or do you think there were times when he was less favored or less known than if you read his
text? There could have been gaps, but in Chinese history, my understanding is that it stayed pretty consistently available at the top echelons, not necessarily out to the wider public, but among those people that were leading the country and leading the military.
A true classic.
And then eventually, it, 200 or 300 years ago, I don't remember exactly the date, but there was a French translation that came out from the Chinese translation. And from the French translation, it started to gain some traction in the West.
I see. So it wasn't well known in Europe in, say,
no.
the Middle Ages.
No.
It's a relatively recent phenomenon.
Fairly recent in the Western culture, yes.
Good. So would you say we're the first military leaders in the West to ever have access to Sun Tzu?
Oh, well, that's hard to say. But
Napoleon had been too early, or?
Some folks speculate because, again, there was a French translation. So he could have that. I do know, now that you mentioned it, that the French translation did precede Napoleon. So in theory, he could have read it. The first English translation of significance came out in 1911. Yeah. And that's actually what's in here, because that was public domain. So what I did is I took that translation, which is written in very heavy British, and I just kind of Americanized it a little bit, but I still think it's actually one of the best translations out there. He gets one particularly challenging passage that I've talked with a lot of native Chinese speakers to get the translations on. And basically it's in the beginning of the book, and I'm really summarizing here, but Sun Tzu gives five things that anybody that's looking at a particular conflict situation should evaluate, terrain, troops, but after that, there's this translation that basically says, now that you've made all these assessments, pay attention to what's going on and take advantage of the circumstances that are out there. That is a very rough translation, but almost every translation I've seen in English has trouble with that part, except for the Gauss translation, the original 1911 translation, where in that case, you had a British officer who spent many years in China, and so was very fluent in the language, and was able to make the bridge.
And there's something called a Gauss transliteration that came up with the symbols and stuff, and we still use
people. There's some people that refer to it, but he had the rare combination of such fluency in the Chinese language and also the military experience You know, you see a lot of the translations that are out there in these, you know, a new translation of a new particular manuscript or, you know, some different angle. He kind of had the whole package.
Okay, but you checked with Chinese speakers now about this passage.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When I was doing my Americanization, all the difficult passages, I'm also a black belt in Kung Fu, so I, including taught by some native Chinese people. And I would actually go through the passages with them and we discuss it to make sure that we had the right translation.
Okay, so you mentioned that you had written this sometime ago in 2003. First of all, talk just briefly about projects you've taken on since then.
Well, since then, I've been working on, I have an intellectual property book that's out. That was published in 2009. That's done well critically, but it's written as a textbook, so it's very expensive. So not a whole lot sold, but where it's sold is important. And then and I'm working on a narrative nonfiction book,
okay,
which is in a different field altogether, but it actually has me working with, the title is The Sharks, the Dark, and the Deep, and it explores the experience the U.S. Navy had with sharks during World War II and some of the other countries. And as a consequence of the initial research, it's morphed into a different project. I became friends with many of the survivors of the USS Indianapolis, a ship that became famous in Jaws. Got to know some of the scriptwriters in Jaws, you know, some of the diving pioneers. And put together a story that follows in particular one survivor, though he is, and he's seen the text. We tell his stories, but the stories on behalf of all the survivors, because what he experienced, most of them, all of them experienced in some form or another. And right now that's being looked at by one of the major publishers. And doing some fine-tuning on it and see where it goes. And there's also an associated film with that called Sharks of War, Truth, Tales, and Terror. That showed at Blue Ocean Film Festival, which is a real...
Is that available for people to watch them?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet, because my advisors are saying just hang on to it till we get the whole package together.
All right. Be waiting.
All right.
All right.
Good. Thank you.